All right. Well, hey, how about we throw an introduction on and we can start having this conversation for public consumption? All right. Yeah. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in to the Banff Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty, and we've got just a whole lot of British people on the call today. Starting off, we've got Mr. Chris Birch of Modiphius Press. How you doing, Chris?
Hey, I'm good. Thanks.
I'm sorry. It's Modiphius Entertainment, right?
It is, but it's fine. Some people call us Modiphius. So we've got there's all sorts of names, but at least you remember it because it's different.
I've heard Modiphius.
Modiphius.
Modiphius. Yes.
Modiphius.
And for those of you who don't know, they are the game company behind Act on Cthulhu, and you guys are doing an Act on Cthulhu movie, aren't you?
Yeah, we are. Yeah, we've got a film script that's next year, but we're doing a low budget film so that we can control it and do what we want. But we're not in a rush. We're just finding actors and people who are interested in being involved.
I'll be an actor. That's just some of the Nazi.
It's going to be a lot of people that want to be soldiers in the scene.
Yeah.
And you guys, I mean, just before, so we make sure we mention it, you guys are also, let's see, Act on Cthulhu is for Savage Worlds, Trail of Cthulhu, and Call of Cthulhu.
The books are actually dual-started for Call of Cthulhu and Savage Worlds, and we did a few Trail of Cthulhu adventures.
And you're doing the Fate Core release of Mindjammer.
Yeah.
And you're doing cool. The Dust Tactics game, and you're going to have a Kickstarter for a co-op Thunderbirds licensed board game, right?
That's right, yeah. And then we've got the Infinity role-playing game coming out in the summer as well.
Oh, what's that about?
It's based on Corvus Belli's Infinity miniatures game, which is beautiful, slightly anime sci-fi miniatures that are in these amazing poses that are quite complicated to put together, but everyone loves them.
Well, I know, and people will be so stacked for an Infinity miniatures game.
Yeah,
it's really big about local nurture.
That's right. It started off, they were going to do an RPG, but there wasn't really any money in it, so they started doing miniatures where there is lots of money. And then we met them and said, hey, why don't we do a role-playing game? And they were like, great. So, that went a bit mental. And then we've got a big announcement on Monday that I can't talk about.
How about exciting! I can put off publishing the podcast until Monday.
Except everyone will know before Monday what it is.
Oh, you're cagey. Okay,
It's so secret, we can't actually... there's loads of famous artists working on it, and loads of famous writers, and it's definitely the biggest thing we've ever done.
Excellent.
You guys have done some pretty big stuff, so that's very exciting.
Yeah.
But alas, you were teasing us, so we'll have to wait till Monday to find out what it is.
Yeah, we've had a lot of fans support us. That's the main thing.
Okay. Well, hey, moving on with the introductions, we've got Ben Counter, who is... let's see, Ben, the name of your company is...
We are Death Spiral Games.
Okay.
Out
of Hampshire,
UK. And we... Yeah.
Do you want to say again? Say Hampshire again.
Am I saying it wrong, Abe?
No, it's fine. It's great.
It's like when we say Arkansas or Maryland. Yeah, it's hilarious.
Christ, all right. And you guys there in the UK, you guys there at Death Spiral are behind the Sleeper RPG Kickstarter. Can you give us a quick elevator pitch? We'll go into more detail on that later.
Sleeper RPG, it's a ultra-modern conspiracy horror action game. We've just got funded on Kickstarter. The final date is in about a week. Of, I guess, this being recorded. So by the time it goes out, I suspect there'll be a few days left for people to jump on. And it's completely awesome. It's based on the creepy secret history of the Cold War. And you are sleeper agents created to rebuild the world in the wake of a nuclear war that never came. Now you're waking up and finding the whole world has changed, but all those creepy secrets are still lying around in hidden weapons bunkers and so on all over the world. And you're the only ones who know about it.
Excellent, excellent. That kind of sets me up to sort of kind of the very loose framing element in our podcast today was the subject of you know, weird alt history RPGs. And you know, Chris has Octane Cthulhu, which injects Lovecraftian, you know, Cthulhu-esque weirdness into World War II. And obviously, you guys have inject kind of some, you know, paranoia-laced Cold War kind of superhero-flavored weirdness into the modern era slash the Cold War.
Yeah.
So, and John Gibbons, who's doing Extreme Earth, I guess we could say that kind of, that's almost cheek and jowl with what Sleeper's doing, don't you think?
Yeah, and I must admit, I've actually pledged on Sleeper's because I like the look of it.
Sweet dude.
But very similar. I mean, the differences between Extreme Earth is a settings book rather than a full RPG book. So you know, the idea is that we've developed Extreme Earth to be used with multiple superhero systems, but it sounds very similar in the vein of, it's a dystopian modern day era, sort of, you know, action, sort of conspiracy, no magic, however, just a dark, twisted sort of world. Low-powered superheroes going around doing dodgy stuff for dodgy governments, basically.
And I'm the head of Fading Goat Press, and we're getting ready to finally release and deliver on Extreme Earth here in the next week or two.
Our Kickstarter was successful last May, so yeah. It's about a nine and a half month project, and I believe we're literally down to the last page of layout as we speak, so hopefully by the end of the week, at the weekends, we should be able to release the PDFs for all the systems.
How many systems do we do that setting for?
Oh my god, that's Supers, Bash, Mutants and Masterminds, Icons, Bulletproof Blues, Cold Steel Wardens, and Hero Games Champions.
Yeah, I guess we should point out the Hero one will require a separate layout, so that'll be a little bit later. But
because Hero's got obviously huge character sheets, so and we tagged that system on the end of the Kickstarter to help us push us over the limit slightly. But yeah, it's been a mammoth task because obviously it's so many systems that we've had to convert the setting book to take into account. But it's been a interesting task, but you know, really enjoyable.
Yeah, and I don't know if we'll ever do a Kickstarter for that many systems again, but it's been an experience.
Oh, no, it was horrific.
Yeah, definitely something.
Sorry, guys, I'm eating a bacon, egg, and sausage sandwich, so...
Oh, you lucky. So
now I'm hungry.
I'm also hungry. So, well, hey, Chris, I don't mean to step on anybody else's toes, but, wow, tell us about the... Your Kickstarter for the Thunderbirds co-op board game launches in August of this year?
Oh, no, actually it's launching in a couple of weeks.
Oh, okay.
And but we're coming out in August. We hope to have the first copies at Gen Con.
Okay. Cool.
If things go according to plan, which I was just talking to the factory to make sure they go to plan. With these things, you never know. But we've kind of approached it because the last two Kickstarters was, you know, we're still working on, and there's... you know, when we first started, we had very little material, just a few bits of artwork, and spent a year or so fulfilling the Kickstarter. So what we've done this time is done all the work up front, all the games design, all the playtesting, all the writing. So the board game is literally, you know, going into prototyping with the factory, and within about a month of the Kickstarter ending, we'll be ordering the stock. So it's a very exciting time.
Is it going to be a co-op game, I presume?
Yeah, it is. So, yeah. You know, obviously, because it's Matt Leacock who did Pandemic and Forbidden Island and Forbidden Desert. It's, you know, it's not Pandemic with Thunderbirds rubbed on it. It's very much a brutal international rescue game where you are up against the odds against all the different missions that come up, which are from the TV shows. And the hood's trying to bring you down, and there's like four different ways to lose, and it's brilliant fun. It's every game is full of moments where you're like, oh no, we almost won. So
how many players? And,
it's 1 to 4 players.
Oh right, okay, cool.
So you can play solo, or you play with your friends.
Oh, solo! You don't get any good solo board games anymore.
No, that's right, and it. Also, it's got these beautiful models of the Thunderbirds in it, all in bright, shiny plastic.
I'd buy it for that, just alone. As if Thunderbird 2, don't jump down, there you go.
Yeah. And, I mean, because We're also going to have like stretch goals for like the pod vehicles, all the amazing little pod vehicles that go in Thunderbird 2, and you'll be able to put them in Thunderbird 2. Oh, and it's going to have, it's got these characters are little pegs that drop into kind of like the cockpit areas of the vehicle. So you've got a kind of head and shoulders of Scott Tracy or Penelope. And so they sit in the vehicles and you rock around the world. And of course, it's all about who you've got with you, because some mission you might get a bonus if you've got Penelope with you, and another mission you might have a bonus if you've got Thunderbird 1, or you might have a bonus if you've got the elevator cars. So it's all about making sure you've got the right gear and collecting mission bonuses, which give you then rerolls to the dice or let you make more gear. Because it's kind of right at the beginning of Thunderbirds, where before they've made all the cool equipment except for the Thunderbirds. So it's a lot of fun. It's very colourful, very visual. It's a real geek mum and dad game. So you can play it with the lads, but you can play it with your wife or your girlfriend, or you can play it with the kids, and it's still cool. You know, it's not like naff family game. It's just like Pandemic, really. You know, Pandemic is a really good example, but instead of millions of people dying horribly, you're going around the world as this cool family and amazing machines rescuing people. So
there's only a handful of people dying terribly if you fail.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's okay. The theory.
did anyone ever die in Thunderbirds? I don't think they did, did they? Did anyone ever die?
Yeah, there must have been a few deaths. People get shot. And things clapped.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, yeah, parties.
That was a good thing about Thunderbirds. They never really kind of strayed away from that. There was never like, oh, don't worry, he's unconscious, he'll be okay in a minute. They just went for it. It was great.
Yeah, with little guns.
Yeah, you have Penelope massacring some agent on the M1 motorway.
That's right.
Exactly,
that's
the machine gun. Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome stuff.
Yeah, it was great.
A little bit of
that's violence. Kids loved it. No holds barred. Don't pull any punches.
Nice. So I look forward to that. Let's see. Wendiphius.com/thunderbirds.html if people want to check out what you're doing now. Put that in the show notes. And you've got a poll up there for different kind of stretch goals.
I'm a big believer in asking fans. I always have a vision, which I think... people want to get excited about what you're doing, but I always listen to what the fans say. So we always ask questions like, what stretch goals do you want? You know, do you want this first or that first? You know, what kind of add-ons do you want? Which of the characters do you like the best? And it worked really well when we did Acting Cthulhu, because when I was in the madness of the Kickstarter, I kind of knew what the fans had said they wanted. So it really guided me when I'm up at 4 in the morning going, oh my God, what do I do now? And so it really helps. And I think the fans appreciate you asking them what they want, and you learn a lot. So it's amazing kind of feedback you get and comments, and looks like everyone's really excited. So, and it's different. We've done two really successful Kickstarters for role-playing games, but it's our first board game. So we're kind of back at square one, really.
Can you play Brains?
Yeah, not in the core game. Brains is in the game because he's building all the machines and he has an impact. But in the one of the first stretch goals is Brains and the actual pod vehicles rather than counters.
What about FAB1? Can you hurtle around the world?
Oh yeah, you've got Pink Limo. You've got Fab1 and Penelope in the core game.
Amazing.
Yeah,
that was what Brains like a young Elton John.
Well, there's even Fab 2, which was the boat. I don't know if you ever remember. You never saw it. Well, you saw it in the show once, but he lost it in a poker match. So it's high-tech yacht. So we've got Fab 2.
Oh,
and we've got Tintin and her Ladybird jet.
Okay, and, what about... It's Cliff Richard in it.
No.
Oh, Shout dear. Out. stretch goal.
That's actually a worryingly good idea. So yeah, but I think, you know, you just see how people love it, and it's amazing. You talk to people and they're not gamers and they're like, oh yeah, Thunderbirds, brilliant. And and there's never been really a strong Thunderbirds game, and it's such a part of British life, of course, yeah, but absolutely. There's as many fans in, it's a bit like Doctor Who, I think there's as many fans of Doctor Who in America as people who live in England, which is quite a lot, but they're just all spread out,
It was a British programme, but the Traces were American, weren't they?
Yeah.
They were American, weren't the Traces,
So it's just about, we're on the promotional road, telling everyone about it and kind of reaching out, kind of, obviously, Matt Leacock's big name, so it's amazing to be able to work with someone like that. He's just such a genius, and we've had so much response from Board Game Geek, and so it's the first of our board game empire, hopefully.
Awesome.
Now, you guys, you have an audio drama project you're doing as well, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah, there's quite a few projects that we've been working on. We've got this mad thing of, we seem to attract lots of cool people who have great ideas to do stuff with us. So, well, we were doing our own podcast, Modiphius Calling, where we talk about other people's games most of the time and just geek out about, oh, we just had this game through this week, it's really cool. And, of course, talk about our stuff. And then we started doing some audio dramas, and we did some tests of some stories I wrote about the characters in Act of Cthulhu, and I love audio dramas. Just think it's something different, because especially when it's Lovecraft, I think it's very difficult just to show a slimy tentacle without going, oh, such horror, stupid horror film.
Well,
I think Lovecraft's really much in your head, and I think that's why audio drama could work really well. So we tried a few scenes with special effects, it kind of worked, and so we're gonna do a series, like a Saturday morning radio show type thing.
That's great.
Lots of cool
I really enjoyed, because I've written a couple of audio drama, short audio dramas, and it's a really very cool and quite weird medium to work in, because if you're writing prose, you've got complete control over everything. I guess if you're writing a script, you can say, well, this will happen, and the director and set dresser and actor and so on will make it happen, but if you've only got sound, you have to get across sometimes quite complex things with only either sound effects or what people are saying, and it's a completely different medium. Just sitting down and trying to say, there's a huge battlefield with loads of stuff going on, but you've only got what it sounds like, is a totally different challenge. It's very cool.
Yeah, that's right. And people have got to you've either got to have a narrator, which we're still debating whether we have a narrator, the people have got to kind of describe in their, themselves. Like, oh no, a tentacle thing reaching from my neck.
H.G. Wells style would be quite cool, though, I think. Yeah, that'd be pretty wicked.
Yeah.
Having the narrator actually tell what's going on and stuff, that'd be really good.
I found that a way is to make it a framing device that's part of the story. So someone, like the cliche, someone being like debriefed or interrogated or something.
Yeah.
And then you slowly say, well, I was on the coast watching for Allied shipping and Zen. And then kind of the sound effect of deep ones coming out of the sea, and the same guy going, 99 dash fish men, dash fish and mensch, or whatever.
Say, so, nice.
Sounds like you're
sorry, go.
I was going to say, it sounds like you ought to write something for us.
Oh, I could do that in a freaking heartbeat. That sounds amazing.
Excellent.
Great.
So we got mutant Nazis in our game as well.
Excellent.
You can't have got mutant Nazi in your game, can you?
Yeah, I mean, I've got an idea of using this girl called Audrey, who's a secretary for Section M, who's quite normal but gets kind of wrapped up in it all. And because you need someone to...
You guys still there?
Yeah,
I'm here.
Did we just lose somebody?
I think we lost Chris.
Oh no!
Hello,
Fish Mensch got it.
Hey, hello,
Chris, you back?
Yeah. Sorry, okay, the Lithos.
Yeah, that's what it is. The stars are right.
It was a glitch in the Matrix.
Hopefully that doesn't mess up the recording. All right. Shoot. All right, hang on 1 second. Let me just make sure we're still recording.
One day they'll get some kind of smart recording program, and there'll be a button called Truncate Cockups.
That'd be handy, yeah. I tell you what, I'm just going to go ahead and stop and restart. And back on. All right, there we go. So
turn off again.
Basically, yeah, it's a sophisticated troubleshooting technique there.
So. That's why.
Okay, cool. Well, hey, we're back. Sorry, brief technical difficulty. And I believe where we left off, Chris was regaling us with all the incredibly cool things his company is doing, and the rest of us were feeling painful and pointed jealousy.
Yeah. But we were also figuring out we could all help each other, which is great.
Hey, Chris, I tell you what, I'm quite interested in that I saw you're now releasing, and I was following it as a Kickstarter. Is that Fragged Empire?
Oh, yeah.
Really love that Kickstarter. The artwork was beautiful on that game.
Yeah, he's a Wade, the guy who's behind it. Yeah. He's genius.
Is he Australian?
Yeah, he is. Yeah, and he's a really lovely guy as well. And he's I came across the artwork, and I love great artwork, and I love great design. And because he's a graphic designer and has just got this very strong eye for the design and the artwork, and we kind of helped them do their Kickstarter, and they did really well, and has funded a whole bunch of books, and he's steaming away writing them now. It's great. It's a good idea because there's no humans. It's all like basically all the aliens that were trying to kill each other, and it's the remnants, and it's the kind of post-apocalyptic idea.
I got the impression when I was looking at his Kickstarter that he's the kind of guy who's probably pumped so much of his own money into it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I looked and, you know, and I thought, God, you know, you've not even got your Kickstarter going, and the amount of artwork you've got in there and the talent that you can see in the book, I thought, you know, he's obsessed.
Yeah, it does show if you've got, with your Kickstarters, if you've got a lot of artwork at the beginning, it's really, really worthwhile because you can... even if it takes a while to build it. I mean, like when we did Acting Cthulhu, we had the art. We really had was the art from two adventures that we'd done. So about 30 pieces, but obviously that's a lot. And if people hadn't seen you before, it just shows what your world is about. And then, you know, luckily we had a few extra pieces get added during the Kickstarter. And it's just having that preparation is brilliant.
Absolutely. Yeah, with Sleeper, we found that the project was very far advanced before we went to Kickstarter, so we had a bunch of artwork done for it. So the book was pretty much illustrated. Yeah, we had a cover, we had all the internal stuff, and it makes you seem much more legit. Art is one of the biggest expenses, I think, in terms of just having, you know, investing capital before you go to print, so it makes it demonstrates that you've got a product and that you're serious. And we were really, really lucky. We had a really good artist, a guy called Manthos, who was able to do what we needed. And it's such a massive benefit to any project like that to have a really good artist that you can rely on and whose stuff really grabs as well. He can do the action scenes, he can do a character portrait, that sort of thing. So that's one of the things that we had up front, and I think that's helped us massively.
Oh, absolutely, because that's what you know, these Kickstarters, you need to attract someone's eye to the page ultimately, don't you?
Pictures are probably the best way to do that.
Also, is before people start reading a text, they're attracted to the video, attracted to the header, you know, and that's what you need to get people's eyes involved.
Well, I think especially with gaming anymore, sometimes I make jokes about, you know, a lot of game companies are in the coffee table book business, but you know, it's a lot of this stuff is art-driven. You know, some of the more high-end books, and people are looking to see that. And also, you kind of got the thing with Kickstarters where we're kind of the first generation of gaming Kickstarters, the Far West, the Dreamer Mounts, the E20s. There are a lot of guys who came on and said, "We're going to make you a great book," and then kind of just fucked off and did nothing. So you really got to bring something to show people that you're going to deliver. And
I think as well is the age that we are now. I mean, obviously everyone's now sort of linked in virally to everything, aren't we? You know, the games that you see, and you know, the graphics on games. And you know, back in the day when role playing games first started, it was literally like a black and white illustration on a word processing document. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, yeah.
And it was all about the rules and the text rather than the imagery. But now I think it's the opposite. I really do. I think, you know, you can get away actually with a system that's not fantastically well written. If you've got awesome artwork, well, at least you can sell the book, if you know what I mean. It might not be long-term successful.
It, it just helps solidify the setting, doesn't it? Okay. I mean, if you've got five different pieces of artwork and you can see straight away, okay, I can tell what it is. There's people in tubes, this, yeah, you know, aliens in tubes, where I know what I'm, this is what I'm going to be kind of explaining to my players, what the, you know, the general environment's about, kind of thing. So
yeah.
Dudes with guns is, yeah, our yeah, principal yeah, principal graphic motif. Dudes with guns doing cool stuff, and then hideous monsters. And you're right, that gets across a lot of the feel of the game, like the kind of emotional content of the game, with, you know, with not minimum effort, because it takes a lot of effort, but with a little time between, you know, the them first clicking on your site or Kickstarter or whatever, and then getting what you're going on about.
So the art in your video is spectacular. It's really, really nice stuff.
Yeah, like I say, yeah, Mantle's really good artist.
It's just really good. I just thought, oh, okay, there you go, give up. I draw as well, so it's like, oh, I'll give up now. Don't bother anymore.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised. Just talking to John about it, we were impressed by the kind of art you have there for Sleeper, and we were wondering how you're doing it on such a low budget, because...
Part of it is finding the right person. Part of it is us banding together and saying, you know what, we're going to stump up some money up front to make this happen. Part of it is luck. Like I say, we found exactly the right person, exactly the right time. But also, I think, realizing that art was a priority early on. I think it's very easy to think, well, I'll write the game and then get some pictures done. It doesn't really work that way. We had the art being worked on when we were writing the book, when we were working out what was going to go where. And they all kind of informed each other. So we ended up with each chapter having a really cool illustration on theme for it, and having stuff that we can put on our Kickstarter, on our website, and say, this is what a scene from the game looks like, this is what your character looks like, this is a bad guy, that sort of thing. And you can have that up front. So it was pretty much our decision that artwork is really, really important. For good or for ill, whether it should be or it shouldn't be, it's one of the ways that you get, it's not only your content, it's your biggest marketing tool, that kind of thing. So we said we're going to have really cool artwork with this. We know we can do the other stuff, but we had to find someone to do awesome artwork, and that's where we're going to put the bulk of our kind of money up front and investment effort.
Yeah, because like I said, I mean, when I saw the actual, what you was actually after, I mean, it was only £2,000, I was like, God, you know, that's not a lot of money. For
that's
a
because the book is, the book is done. Well, it's in layout and editing, which are non-trivial tasks, but they are the kind of last ones to do. And we need to fund the launch. And we thought, well, we can either stump up a stack of cash, or we can actually not only make the money to print it and deliver it, but also get the word out, get people excited about it, get some feedback about the game, get some buzz about it. So in our particular case, it was, the game is pretty much done. It's in the latter stages now. We need to basically get it over the edge. And I think that's a more attractive proposition for pledgers, because they see, well, this game is done. They just need to make it a physical reality. And that's what you're pledging for, rather than give us some money and we'll promise we'll make a really cool game. Well, the game is already out there. We've run it. We played it. We've run games at UK Games Expo over the last couple of years, which have gone down really well. So that's the situation that Sleeper's in now, which is, I think, was quite a, it ended up quite a beneficial situation Kickstarter wise, because it does, like you say, it does make it stand out. We've got a lot of stuff we can put there and show people and say, this is what you're going to get.
I think another thing as well, as I noticed, I think, is we all know that from a UK point of view, Kickstarters don't have the same kick, literally, as they do in America. You know, I think, I mean, I've seen your guys, and, you know, you've reached your goal, 10 days to go, and you've still got a lot, you know, you quite easily, I reckon, easily surpass what you're asking for. But it does make you wonder, if you were an American company and it was an American-run Kickstarter, how much would you have made by this time? And I think you would have probably made a lot more. And I think that's just a shame, really. But the likes of Chris and Modiphius Entertainment and Modiphius Games, hopefully going to try and, you know, no disrespect to the Yanks, you know, but hopefully try and pull some of the quality games back to the UK, the production value of them.
Well, the UK always seems to punch above its weight in creative industries. Role-playing game is very... And we're a pretty nerdy nation. and so I can absolutely see there being a kind of British invasion of games design in role-playing games, if it's sort of leveraged properly. All it takes is one or two big properties to go over there and people start.
Yeah, well,
if a game spells colour that particular way, then it's probably pretty awesome.
Yeah, the awards, like at the Ennies at Gen Con every year, there's always a lot of British companies like Cubicle 7 and Mongoose and all sorts of other people, Pelgrane Press, picking up nominations and awards. So it's always, and quite noticeably so it's great that the British are taking a bigger slice of the role-playing world and the gaming world, you know, especially with Kickstarter. There's so many people who've done some great board games over here now as well, and that's just rising. And the you know, the board game industry in Europe's massive compared to America.
Absolutely.
So what you're saying is RPG is kind of the farm league and the real money's in board games, is that what you're saying, Chris?
Well, it depends what you've got. If you've got exploding cats,
Christ, that's ridiculous.
But there's a lot of good money in miniatures at the moment if you get it right, but there's a lot of costs. But it's also a lot simpler. Like, you haven't got a lot of creative people, there are a lot of writing and editing and layout to do. You've just got a bunch of miniatures. Obviously,
miniatures seems to be the really big gaming campaigns of miniatures. I'm a gigantic miniatures geek, and I've impulse jumped on a couple of pledges myself.
Yeah, and they look great. Of course, it's hard to make it stand out. You know, are you just another, you know, Marines and Aliens game? Are you?
Yeah. The capital are you offering something different? Huge as well.
Well, I think, I mean, I always prefer to go for the kind of the small scale skirmish style miniature games, because I think I was, like a lot of people, put off by Games Workshop and the monopoly they had and the price of the miniatures and the fact that you had to buy hundreds of miniatures to get going. And, you know, that just, it just killed me in my, you know, many years ago when I was into miniature gaming. But now, you know, I like the small scale skirmishes where you can have, say, just 10 miniatures on the board, you know, and you can get just the long game and the more high quality miniatures to play with, you know. That's what I like.
In terms of miniatures, I go for really awesome miniatures, and regardless of company, to paint, and GW still do some of the best miniatures that you can get. Certainly their single pose plastic ones are gorgeous. And then, honestly, because I'm such a huge miniatures and everything has to be painted fascist, in actually playing games, I'll go for smaller scale ones. So my zen thing is sitting around and painting miniatures, and that'll be often GW. And then sitting down, painting something to play, it'll be something like the Batman Miniatures game. Or I gave Infinity a go. You mentioned Infinity earlier. Infinity has some gorgeous, especially the latest waves. The kind of post-operational Iceland ones are really, 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 really pretty. As an enormous miniatures nerd, I've been completely seduced by some of the really cool Kickstarters for good-looking miniatures, not as a game, but just to get three or four of their models just to paint because they look good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got a buddy back in Indiana. He doesn't actually play Games Workshop, but once the summer is over, he's a lot of time inside, you know, killing time, and so painting Games Workshop miniatures is how he kills time till the snow goes away.
Oh yeah, it's brilliant for that. Our brains are designed to just focus on one thing and just do it as well as we can. I do have my third Games Workshop Imperial Knight on my desk right now, and if you get three together, that's an army. So I kind of almost sort of have a 40k army.
For how much though? Yeah, that's the thing. How much?
It's probably one of the cheaper armies to get a 1500 point army together for. I'm always going to be an apologist for GW because they pretty much pay my rent for the day job. but they have, in terms of what the absolute best miniatures you can get are, some of them are definitely GWs. Yeah. But then again, I'm sure that some of them are ones that are percolating down through things like Kickstarter with just individual sculptors and someone who's willing to put up some capital and make that happen. I think Kickstarter is one of the examples that it democratizes creativity, in that anyone who's got the ability to do it can do it. You don't need a company behind you. As long as you're willing to put the work in and you've got the ability, anyone can make, I say anyone can make a role-playing game. It's not that simple, but it means that someone like us could make a game and then put it out there, get it shown to people, get it, you know, get enough capital together to print it, that sort of thing.
I think
Kickstarter makes that happen. The flip side of that is you get a lot of trash, I have no doubt at all, and a lot of vaporware. But the good thing is, if there are good ideas and people are capable of doing them, they can make that a reality and get it out to people.
I'm looking forward to maybe say 5 or 10 years time when 3D printing really reaches its peak, and you know then you'll be able to sort, you know, you'll be able to design your own miniatures, real high quality, you know, and just create your own from scratch. That's what excites me.
It'll be like a Star Wars replicator, but for miniatures. I have no doubt at all that once people start getting 3D printers in their houses that can do printing of the necessary detail and finish, someone will be selling blueprints for miniatures like people sell PDFs of RPGs.
Designs online, just pay $5, get a design, print it out, job done. Fantastic.
Well, that's Shapeways, really. I mean, like, it's Shapeways, but having your own machine, you know, because once all the machines are cheap, you won't need a Shapeways. You'll just download the design from them, probably.
Yeah. And there are companies now, I'm sure, thinking we have to make 3D printing like DVD players that they used to be really expensive, and now pretty much everybody has one. There's someone saying we need to be able to put this on everybody's desk so they can download a pencil sharpener or whatever.
You know when Samsung come out with one, that's when it's all changing. So.
then
the race is really starting.
It'll all happen again.
Yeah.
I just have to clarify that it's a Star Trek replicator, not a Star Wars replicator.
Sorry.
Oh my God, I didn't notice that. That's a slip, yeah.
I'm a Star Wars guy, not a Star Trek guy. I do apologize. I have my Lego Death Star in front of me right now.
Excellent.
I didn't know they make one of those. That's pretty cool.
I put a canteen in mine.
Canteen, yeah. Has it got a tray, though?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got Darth Vader with a tray.
Awesome. That's fantastic.
As soon as I saw that, I thought, I can't not do that.
like a cafeteria tray.
Yeah, I want to put like a creche in there and a rec room and things like that.
Little foosball table, rebels on one side.
Yeah, all the stuff that the Death Star would logically have to have. toilets and kind of coffee concession or something.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, it's coming up on 1 o'clock Mountain Time, and I gotta get back to work. Anything else we want to cover before we wrap up and call it a podcast?
I suppose it might be good if you get a sleeper link out there, seeing it's got 10 days to go, get more people pledged to that.
Yeah, absolutely. We're funded, so if people pledge, you're going to get your book. So we're over that hump. And if the stretch goals get far enough, I have to write another book, which will be hilarious for everyone involved. I would say I've got my marketing hat on. If you like ... you'll love Sleeper. If you like Delta Green, you'll love Sleeper. If you like Resident Evil, you'll love Sleeper. If you like Jacob's Ladder, you'll love Sleeper. If you like those ridiculous CIA mind control conspiracy theories, you'll love Sleeper. All that's in there, all that amazing stuff. And yes, I've no doubt that there will be a link somewhere to the Kickstarter Sleeper page.
So what's the stretch goal book you're talking about?
If we get to, I think, our final stretch goal, the Sleeper Kickstarter is for the core book and for a novella. We wanted this to be a whole world as well as just one game. So I wrote a novella called Baron. That's part of the Kickstarter launch, and you can pledge for the book and the novella and combinations thereof. And if the Kickstarter makes enough money, I do another novella and send it out to everyone who pledged for the original novella.
Cool. Excellent.
Which would be just hilarious.
And Chris, you mentioned you guys have a huge top secret announcement coming out on Monday, and you will not tell us what that's going to be.
Unfortunately, not.
So but, let's say I'm a hypothetical BAMF podcast listener. I'm intelligent, handsome, rich, and I'm listening to this podcast thinking, wow, I want to know what Modiphius Press is up to. And look, today is Monday, February the 9th. Where do I go to find that out?
Without giving away the link to that page, which would be quite obvious, it would just be modiphius.com.
Just modiphius.com.
Is it www.invasionofthenazifishandmen?
That's coming next.
Sweet.
That's my pitch, by the way.
All right, guys. Well, I appreciate everybody's time. And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. And we'll catch you next time on the Banff Podcast.